Blog Talk Radio.
General Quarters, Security Condition 3.
EQ, Security 3, sir. General Quarters 3, intruder alert. EQ 3, intruder alert.
Where would I be without that doorman? He really keeps things running tight around here. But you know that already if you're a regular listener, but if you're not, welcome to Madam Perry's Salon. I am your host and cruise director, Madam Perry, and we are here for another fun night right here in the Genie's Bottle. You know, we have had, thanks to you, first of all, I do this every week, and I have to keep on because I want to thank you all for listening, everyone who subscribed. You know, there some people subscribe on Blog Talk Radio, and if you're listening live tonight or you listen on Blog Talk Radio, but you haven't subscribed, think about pushing that hot pink rectangular button that says follow and being a subscriber. And that way, you know, you can find out ahead of time who's coming on. Or you can do that by following the Facebook page for Madam Perry Salon. But if you listen to your podcast on the Apple iTunes or Stitcher, you can also subscribe there. I listen to my podcasts or different podcasts on the weekend that I subscribe to. And that's what I kind of keep them all on, so I can just enjoy. But thank you because of the fact that you follow, you've downloaded so many shows, you share these with friends. Because of that, you help me grow the audience and help me keep getting great guests like we've had recently, or we have coming up, like we have tonight. You know, last week we had J. Blake Perkins, a historian and teacher and author from Arkansas, and his book was Hillbilly Hellraisers. It was very interesting. It was more of a sociological study, and it really dispelled a lot of the myths of that we all have of the hillbillies and where they came from. Actually, back 100 years ago or so, most of the people considered hillbillies, the smallholders in the Ozarks, were actually leaned more toward pacifism and or socialist, and very different from how, and very hardworking, very different from the stereotypes and cartoon characters we often see. So check back to that show if you missed it, and check out that book. Also, Linda Civitello was here with Baking Powder Wars, she's a food historian, about the history of baking powder and how it came to be created. And good Lord, the massive fights, the corporate sneakiness and dealing and underhandedness, and even the Klan was involved in some of it. There was a lot of underhanded stuff going on, and bad advertising, just flat out lies and stuff, going to prove that there's really nothing new under the sun. And also, we had Chris Difford from Squeeze. You might remember him. He was a co-founder and front man of Squeeze, you know, with the songs like Tempted by the Fruit of Another, Black Coffee in Bed, Annie, Get Your Gun. Just all those. Chris was on here talking about his book, Some Fantastic Place, My Life in and Out of Squeeze. Very interesting guy. It's a very good book, so I recommend getting that. Coming up in a few weeks, we have Bootsy Collins. Yeah, that's the one. Make My Funk the P-Funk. Bootsy Collins is coming. And we're going to have more musicians, more comedians. But tonight, this is an extra special night. Now, many of you who are regular listeners, I do have some what we call the unusual suspects and regulars, and I am thrilled and delighted to have so many different types of folks on and so many talent. But tonight's guest is going to be a first for me and for right here in the Genie Bottle for you. So how am I going to describe this fellow? If you haven't already checked out the information, you probably have. We all know that just in the last maybe 30 years, something that was once considered almost taboo or trashy or that's not for nice people, tattoos, just really came into its own in a preponderance of popularity. But that's not all. Body piercing. Now, tonight's guest is the person who, let me say, an MTV documentary referred to him as the granddaddy of body piercing, the modern body piercing industry. He's the man who really brought it into the public as something that was very professional, much more artistic, while still staying true to the origins of the art of body piercing. And I started just as a jewelry maker, and out of the back of a retail space, he became a significant industry wholesaler, and people in the business revere this man. So before I keep on trying to explain something that's brand new to me, I want to learn just like you, if you don't already know. And if you do know, like people that are telling me on Instagram today that are very excited about this show, you want to get in here and talk more. My guest tonight is, of course, the granddaddy, the godfather of modern body piercing, Mr. Jim Ward. Jim, welcome to Madame Perry's Salon. Come on in and sit down.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Glad to be here.
I am delighted to have you here. And you know, the more I have researched you and read about you, people are in such awe of you, people that follow you. And I think one of the reasons that I keep getting from everything and that I read and interviews and videos that I've watched is that people feel like you brought sophistication and respectability to body piercing, mostly because you were concerned about safety, health, and responsible practicing of the art of body piercing, because it is an art.
It is indeed. It sort of started with a personal fetish that developed back in the late 60s. I was living in New York and got involved with the gay leather scene there. And that was kind of the beginning. When I eventually landed in West Hollywood in California, things kind of just happened by fate. I met a man named Doug Malloy, who became my friend and mentor, and kind of got me started down this road. So it just, when I started, I had no idea where it would go. But it was such an underground phenomenon, and people were just, who were into it, kind of had to rely on, you know, whatever they could lay their hands on. When I pierced my own nipples in 1969, I used a push pin and a cork from a wine bottle, which is kind of the hard way to go about it. And I realized that there was, first of all, Doug made it clear that there were other people who were interested, who were really into this. And I realized that there had to be a better way. And with Doug's encouragement, I started my business, which was called Gauntlet Enterprises originally, later became Gauntlet Incorporated. And most people just called it the Gauntlet.
Now, when you say you did your own nipple piercing, now here's what this brings to mind for me. I'm a licensed esthetician. You know, one of the things that we do is, you know, body waxing. And I've done my own waxing. That's hard. And when I say that, what I mean is, I know it's hard enough to, when you do it, you're putting the wax on, you put the cloth down, and then you know what comes next. You've got to yank it up.
Oh,
you
got to
yank it up and look at you, huh? And pretend like you're not. So tell me how you did your own like that without.
Well, waxing covers a much wider, broader area. A piercing is concentrated in a very small spot. And if it's done by somebody who actually kind of knows what they're doing, it can be over in just a fraction of a second. And invariably, over the years, I've done thousands of piercings. People invariably say, oh, well, that didn't hurt nearly as bad as I thought it would. So I think I'd rather have a piercing than get waxed, quite frankly.
Okay. Yeah, because, see, I'm thinking, you know, the nipples are such a sensitive area that, what do you do? Did you ice them down first or what?
No, I just put the cork on one side and the point of the pin on the other and pushed. It was really actually quite simple. The hard part was getting the ring in afterwards.
Okay. Can we stop just a minute? Let people know, first of all, before we go any further, if you're listening live tonight, where my guest is Jim Ward, who is known as the granddaddy of body piercing or modern body piercing, former owner of the Gauntlet, the famous Gauntlet, and author of the book Running the Gauntlet, which we'll talk about. And you want to talk to him. If you have a question, the number is 646-716-9922. That's 646-716-9922. If you want to call in and talk to Jim Ward here in Madame Perry Salon. So go ahead, Jim.
Okay. What else would you like to know?
All right. Well, first of all, let's go back a little bit on the history. Now, body piercing is nothing, it's not that new. You know, as I say, anybody that I've had on that's written a book that has to do with people and cultures, there's not much new under the sun. This is something that's been around for, what, 1,000 years or more?
Oh, who knows? It goes back, you know, many thousands of years, most likely. The ancient Egyptians had ear piercings. There are references in the Kama Sutra, which is quite ancient. The Romans and the Greeks. It's a universal part of the human psyche, I think, to do things to your body. There are many reasons why. Part of them is the aesthetic part, kind of like the same reason you wax. But waxing is kind of temporary, whereas we're talking about permanent changes to your body. So there are things like tattooing and piercing in particular that are permanent. You do those things. Of course, some people do them just because they like the way they look. But I came to this, honestly, from a fetish point of view. I discovered that little piece of metal inserted into strategic points in your body can greatly enhance erotic sensations. And that was my reason, really, for trying to share that message with the public at large. This could greatly enhance your sex life. Of course, as time went by, that shifted. Now mostly people get pierced because they like the way it looks. But I think they're missing something. And then there is, of course, historically speaking, there is a kind of a rite of passage aspect to it. People do these things to mark important transitions in their lives, you know, like from when you become when you change from being a child to an adult, when you go from being single to being married. When I had my stores, some people, I remember a guy who came in to get a piercing because he had finally gotten a divorce from a wife who did not support his interest in body piercing. So there are many reasons why.
You're right, rite of celebration or passage or something. But yeah, see, I would think that too, that the fetish, anything that adds to, you know, your sensuality, your sexual pleasure, is, if it's not harmful, that's good reason enough, actually, would be. So what do you think, well, let me see, I'm trying to go, where do I want to go here? It's been around a while, but then, and we know how you got involved, but what do you think has made body piercing more popular in the last, I don't know, 20, 30 years?
I think that the big thing that, it was like the big explosion came in 1989. There was a book that came out called Modern Primitives. It was put out by a publisher called Research. And it just, people just discovered it and went crazy. And suddenly everybody wanted to get, particularly for whatever reason, navel piercings. Our business in navel piercings just exploded. And it was a time when all of a sudden everybody wanted to open a piercing salon. And they just started springing up like mushrooms. And then there was a music video that came out called Crying with shorted out, the Crying video. And Alicia Silverstone was in it getting her navel pierced, although it was faked. Somebody else did their stand-in, but it looked like she was getting her navel pierced. And it just struck a nerve. And the whole thing just exploded.
So, yeah, now I remember that's coming back to me. Yeah, the navel piercings when that got popular first. Why?
It was Aerosmith, by the way.
Pardon?
It was an Aerosmith music video.
Okay. I'm trying to think. I can't really remember that, but I do remember when now that you mentioned, when navel piercing became popular in jewelry and for that. And then I think it's, but to me, that kind of thing usually comes because somebody wants to be, they see a celebrity do it and they want to do it to be like the celebrity.
Yes. As I said, Alicia Silverstone was in the video, but also around that same time, Jean-Paul Gaultier had some fashion shows with pierced models, and that also added to fuel the enthusiasm.
Oh yeah, Gaultier likes to really bring things, have things very very fresh and like beyond the edge on his show, and his. When it's Fashion Week on the runway, magnificent. What kind of people? But that's not all. It's not all just being like fashion, like the people that want to watch a celebrity. There are other people. So what kind of other people get the body piercing? And I'm talking about not just somebody who wants like a something just for sensual or for fashion, but what other people get body piercings and why?
Well, when I started, of course, it was largely gay men who got pierced. That was the demographic I was familiar with, and that was the direction that I advertised to encourage to come get pierced by me. And then the word gradually spread. It spread from the gay SM side to the heterosexual SM side. And then the rockers and the punkers got wind of it, and it and the bikers. It just continued to spread over the years. And eventually, of course, it by come 1989, it hit the mainstream in a really big way.
Now, were you, how were you taught? Were you self-taught or who?
Well, go back kind of to the beginning. I moved to Los Angeles, to specifically to West Hollywood, in 1973. And there were these weird series of fateful incidents, there's no other way to describe it, that I met Doug Malloy. And Doug was a wealthy, he was a millionaire. That was his assumed name that he did kinky things under. His real name was Richard Simonton, and he was one of the four founders of the Muzak Corporation. So he was very wealthy. But over the years, he had this great fetish for body piercing. And over the years, he had traveled around the world. He had met other people who were into it. And then he had also started advertising in the gay press in Los Angeles to locate people who were interested. And he had put together a mailing list of about 100 people worldwide who were interested. About the when I met him, it was kind of casual at first, but about that time I was also dating a guy who wanted me to pierce his nipples. And I knew that there had to be a better way than the push pin and wine bottle cork. So I called up Doug and I said, you know, would you give me some pointers on how to do this? And I said, also, can you tell me where I can get some jewelry for it? And he said, well, sure, I'll be glad to help you. But as far as jewelry goes, the only place I know is some guy in San Diego who makes gold rings, but they're very expensive. Now, this is like 1975. And the rings at that time, he quoted me, were $200 a piece. And that's in 1973 money, or 1975 money, which is quite a lot. And I thought, well, that's kind of silly because I've studied jewelry making. I can do that on my own. So I went to a little lapidary shop in Hollywood and bought some gold wire and a few tools, and I made my first body piercing jewelry. And then subsequently, Doug and I and my boyfriend got together, and I did those piercings under his direction. To a certain extent, that was a lot of my training, because Doug's techniques were very crude, and I learned pretty quickly that if they were going to work, I needed to make some modifications to particularly the equipment. The initial piercing needles were veterinarian hypodermic needles, and that's all well and good, except after you've made the hole, how do you get the jewelry in it? The jewelry does not follow the bevel on the point of a hypodermic. And then I had this little inspiration that if I cut the syringe coupling off, it would be very easy to follow through with the jewelry. And that was a big step forward. And the other thing that I think that helped a lot was that my mother had been an assistant to an ophthalmologist for 25 years. So I had a basic grasp of sterilization and some of those important things that go into doing something like piercing safely. But yes, in many ways I was self-taught. Doug did know what the basic placements were and showed me how to mark them and where to place them. But there was a lot of, there was a learning curve.
Wow. So, yeah, that's right. I wanted to get to that. You were already, you had already been making jewelry. You were a jeweler.
Yes, I'd done, started when I lived in New York. I'd taken a few hobby type classes And then an ex-lover of mine who was a watchmaker managed to get me into a class for professional jewelry makers. So I've had quite a bit of training in that department.
Cool. So that's, to me, that just seems like it's almost, you know, I think if you alluded to this earlier, it's like a series of things just kept happening, like meaningful coincidences, maybe your synchronicity, things that sort of led you to your work, actually. And being
It's quite true. I call it fate, but yes.
Yeah. So with this, and actually, I posted one of your videos showing the technique that you were talking about how to, like, piercing with a tube and then putting the jewelry in and so forth. I put it on Facebook. So then how about the gauntlet? How did that start?
Well, after I had pierced my boyfriend's nipples, Doug called me up one day and he said, "Let's go have lunch." So we met, and he says, "You know, I really think you should start a business. There are people out there who are interested in getting pierced and also in buying jewelry." And he lent me, over a period of a couple of years, he lent me, I think, $3,000. And I looked for a space and found one there in West Hollywood that was a short distance from where I was living. And in 1975, I started the business in 1975 working out of my house. But I realized that if this was ever going to have any kind of legitimacy, I would need a storefront. And that's when I scouted one out and I opened the Gauntlet Salon in 1978.
Okay, so the first one was opened, where? Was that in San Francisco?
No, the first one was in West Hollywood. And then in the late 80s, I met my current boyfriend, lover, now husband, Drew, and I moved to San Francisco. I found a woman named Elaine Angel who to take over managing the West Hollywood store, and I moved to San Francisco and then subsequently opened the shop there. And then in time there came a studio in New York and a one in Seattle and a franchise in Paris, France.
Whoa. Now, I've got to ask you this. That had to feel exciting.
Oh, I loved it. It was always very satisfying. Being able to work with people and to help them realize their dreams in a way was such a joy.
And then with the different stores, the different locations, but Seattle, and in Paris. I mean, I would just think that would just be like a culmination. Like, you know, I would have never thought I would be doing this as a career, and now here I am, international. And then, but let me ask you something else. And I want to know which came first. I know that you. So I'm going to go ahead and give away several things in a row, folks. And by the way, if you're listening live and you do want to talk to Jim Ward about body piercing, about the gauntlet, about anything that's talking about or anything that interests you with this, the number is 646-716-9922. That's 646-716-9922. I know that you were responsible for, you created a magazine called Your Fans.
Yes.
Piercing Fans Quarterly. Which was the first publication dedicated to body piercing.
Yes.
And to the best of my knowledge. I'm so sorry. If I could just say, in addition to that, you're also, as we were discussing earlier with this, but to go a little further than what you said, because I think you're a bit modest, you are also responsible for developing a lot of the tools, techniques, and designs that people use today.
That's true. The piercing needle, which of course I mentioned earlier, which is basically a modified veterinarian hypodermic needle, is still in use today. Now there are companies that actually manufacture them specifically for body piercing. They are super, super sharp. They just go through the tissue like it was butter. They're disposable. You use them once and dispose of them. Whereas the ones in originally we just would sterilize and reuse. There was one particular piercing called a Prince Albert. It's a male genital piercing, a penis piercing. And the technique that Doug showed me involved piercing into the head of a Q-tip, which if you can imagine is kind of a rough target, especially when you have to go there, you've got a membrane of tissue between.
Uh-huh.
And once I opened the, had two locations and had to start training piercers, I realized it was too difficult to take people to master in any kind of a timely fashion. And then it occurred to me that there was a better way. And I developed something my brain. It's a tube. Yes. It's a piercing tube. And it made it possible to pierce through so easily because the point of the needle just finds the inside of that tube without any trouble. It just guides it right through the tissue.
And I think that's the one that I put, that was just a little short video, about a minute and 40 seconds that I was looking at today. It looks like it's just makes it very simple. In other words, it doesn't creep me out to watch it because it doesn't look painful. It looks very simple and clinical.
If a piercer knows what they're doing, mm-hmm. has experience, is skilled, it's really amazingly simple and relatively, in terms of pain, it's minimal.
So how do people, you really brought this business into the state that it's in, more of a state of the art, if you've used that term. Because I know it seems to be an overused term, but you really did give it safety, responsibility. And how would people today learn how to do body piercing?
That's a bit of a challenge. The best thing, of course, is to get an apprenticeship with someone who knows what they're doing. There are people who do, who have training, do training schools, if you will. There's a colleague of mine named Fakir Mushafar, who has a school in San Francisco. His website is Fakir, that's spelled F-A-K-I-R .org, I believe it is, or maybe it's .com. But at any rate, he has some outstanding instructors, and it's worth looking into if it's something that you want to learn. I would also recommend that if you're interested, that you connect with the Association of Professional Piercers, and their website is safepiercing.org. They have a big conference every year in Las Vegas with multiple courses teaching anatomy and techniques and things. Well worth it if you're serious about learning the craft.
Okay, are you with me?
I'm with you. Can you hear me?
Okay. All right. So, yeah, the Association of Professional Piercers.
Yes.
Because,
that was, again, that was another one of Gauntlet's legacies, because when all of those little piercing shops were springing up all over the place, California got a little bit freaked out and decided that maybe this was something that needed to be regulated. So a few of the responsible piercers got together, Grimetto, and negotiated or spoke with politicians, health officials, to make it clear to them that no, this they did not want to close down the industry. They wanted to regulate it and make sure that it was done safely. So that led to the formation of the Association of Professional Piercers.
Do you think that was a good idea?
I think it was a necessary idea because, unfortunately, people just tend, it would have been nice if people could have been responsible and policed themselves, but that was not the situation. A lot of these things were motivated by money. People wanted saw a chance to make money real easily, and it didn't matter that they didn't know what they were doing as far as they were concerned.
And that, I think that's what I'm saying. When you said that the state was starting to get a little freaked out about it, yeah, I think it was you were so savvy to ahead of time. Okay, we'll go ahead and pull this together. And as you said, that was another legacy of the Gauntlet. And it gives, I think it gives the proper practitioners a comfortable place to, an association to say, you know, you can go so-and-so, you can always find somebody to do it cheaper or whatever, but I think you're going to want somebody associated with
a
professional organization that has standards.
If somebody wants to get pierced, I suggest they go to the safepiercing.org, the APP's website, list their members. It's a good place to look for someone who should be responsible for doing a good job.
Mm-hmm.
A good, safe job.
So, if I wanted to do something done, so you're telling me then the best way for me to find, or for me or anyone to find, and I want you to give me this website, let me give us the information again, because I want to make sure that I share it on all of my social media as well. So the best place for somebody to find someone in their area?
It's safepiercing.org.
Okay, safepiercing.org. I know you said it, but things like that are always good to repeat. So the book, your book, Running the Gauntlet, how did you come to put together a book? Or whose idea was that? Because I feel like you attract the right people who see your value and encourage you to keep doing more prolific work. So the book, Running the Gauntlet.
Well, Gauntlet ran into some a really difficult end. The company went under in 1998. I had an unscrupulous manager who got involved with someone who was even more unscrupulous than he, and they succeeded in destroying the business, and it went bankrupt. And the bankruptcy court trustee decided to split the assets into two parts. There was the equipment and the inventory, which they sold off, and then they had the intellectual property. And that set, she was just not able to sell it. And finally, she decided that maybe she could just get rid of it if she posted it for sale on eBay. And that's what she did subsequently. And a dear friend of mine organized things and purchased the intellectual property and then sold it back to me for a dollar. And that made it possible. This was in, I'm trying to remember the year, 2000, I'm trying to look it up, but without that intellectual property, I don't know that I would ever have written the book because I didn't have access to or the ability to legally use that material. But it's so broken by the dissolution of my business that it was really a cathartic process putting together the book. I felt it was important to tell the story about how the industry came into being, my place in it, how I got interested in it, the story, basically. And I think it was just a very therapeutic process for me to write this story of basically how this industry came into being.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so true. What do you still make jewelry?
I have not. There are so many really good jewelry companies out there that, and I'm not really set up for it. I've talked with some friends in the industry about maybe reissuing some of the old gauntlet designs, but that's kind of on the back burner at the moment. I anticipate that will change in the future, but for the moment, it's kind of on the back burner, as I say.
Yeah. Well, I've got, well, actually two questions that on my mind, I don't want to forget them. One is what came out of the gauntlet that made it unique? And also, what do you consider to be the gauntlet's legacy as well as yours?
Well, of course, let's just face it. All of those little studios on every other street corner around the world is really a legacy of Gauntlet. I don't think they would be there if Gauntlet hadn't existed, or if they did, they wouldn't look like what they look like now. And Gauntlet is my legacy. I never consciously set out to create an industry, but that's basically essentially what happened. Joseph Campbell said about following your bliss. That's what I did. And lo and behold, I guess I am the granddaddy of the modern piercing movement. And I have all kinds of offspring. People who are carrying on my what I started.
Was it difficult? Because some of the body piercing, especially genitalia, is so personal. The first few times you did it, was it a little uncomfortable or difficult to get used to? And I'm asking this,
yeah,
like I said, that used to do personal waxing. So,
well, especially in the very beginning, when when I didn't have the proper equipment, it was particularly difficult and challenging. Once I had equipment that was really reliable and worked well, and I sort of had gotten my technique together, not so much. But to be honest, I was always more comfortable with men's genitals than I was with women's. And that's just because I don't have that kind of equipment, so I don't quite know, I mean, yes, I've pierced lots of women. I've pierced lots of women down there. But, you know, it. I don't know what that feels like. I always had a little bit of trepidation about it, but you know, you've become a professional.
And even though I've waxed women and men, I never waxed a man's around the genital area, because at the time that I was in the business, that just wasn't done. At least not somebody that would go to a department store salon or a private nails and waxing salon or facial salon to have that done. They would go to someplace they felt more comfortable, going in there. So I never did that. And I'd probably, I would do it, but I'd be like you. I'd be thinking, I don't have that equipment. I'm not sure exactly. I know it's a sensitive area. and I wouldn't want to hurt anyone. So, if somebody were going to get some piercing, their first time body piercing. Oh, and I think we have, we do have a caller on the line here, actually. So, hi, welcome to Madame Perry Salon. You're here with Jim Ward and me. Oh, and they hung up. So, okay. All right. I just lost the call, but if you're still there, call back. I was trying to take you off mute to bring you in to talk to Jim Ward. So please give us a call if you want to. We'll be here for a couple more minutes. So until they call back, what kind of words of caution would you have for somebody? What should they watch out for? As far as, and then not as far as finding someone reputable, but as far as personally getting adjusted to that new part of them.
Well, any good piercer, any reliable piercer, will be very careful to share the aftercare. Make sure that the person is informed about how to take care of the piercing when they go home. That is absolutely essential. And those procedures have changed over the years. We've tried different products and different approaches, but talk to your piercer and make sure that you understand how you can take care of your piercing going forward. Then be careful, don't, especially if it's a genital piercing, be gentle. Don't do anything rough with it until it's had a good chance to heal up. And
okay, well, Jim, I had another caller that disappeared, but the first one that I lost is back, and I want to say welcome to Madame Perry Salon. You're here with myself and Jim Ward. Come on in, tell us who you are.
My name is Trey.
Hey, Trey, how you doing?
I'm good. Very good. I just wanted to say, Mr. Ward, I have been a piercer for 20 years. You have been my number one influence behind everything. I even follow your Facebook and, throw out reactions and commentary to, little funny posts you put up here and there. I think you're a wonderful person, and I thank you for all the influence you provided.
Well, thank you for that. I appreciate it. It's nice to know. It's nice to know that I always enjoy meeting my my children, as it were, my grandchildren.
Well, I'm definitely proud to call you granddad if I can.
You have a question, Trey?
What I wanted to ask, with all of the steps that you've taken over the course of your life that have developed body modification, body piercing specifically, into the fold where it's becoming more acceptable in modern society. How do you feel about the exploitation of the industry by people who are opening shops who don't really care for the aesthetic? They're only looking for profit and really, you know, creating a competitive environment in which, you know, nobody is really gaining as far as understanding the importance of body piercing's place in modern day society and proper maintenance and care of the work that they're putting out. You know, just curious about how you feel about what people are doing with your legacy.
Well, there, as I said, it, or I did not say, I'm sorry. It's kind of like when you have a child. At a certain point, the child takes on its personality and its own life. And I have no control at all over what people do. Sadly, there will always be people who are only in it for the money and don't really care about the well-being of their clients. That's just a given. And it's unfortunate, but that's part of human nature, I've discovered. The best thing I can tell you is just maintain your integrity. And people, you will develop a following. People will have bad experiences with other companies, other piercers, and they will come to you. And even if you if your prices are higher, they will realize that they get what they pay for. Just stay true to your values. That's the only thing I can tell you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
That's good advice.
I would not have expected to hear anything different from you.
You know me too well.
Jim, do you still do body piercing for people?
Rarely. It's usually for friends or friends of friends who twist my arm. I was asked to do a weekend piercing gig, if you will, for a studio in Oklahoma City not long ago. And that was a wonderful experience. I really enjoyed the opportunity to get back in the piercing room. But I've been there, I've done it, and it's not something I would care to do full time anymore.
I see. All right, but yeah, you're right. You've had a magnificent career, as you know, everything I read, and as Trey can attest, you've had a magnificent career and one to certainly be proud of, and a lot of people you've helped guide the way. Trey, you're still with us?
Yes, I am.
What does it mean to you to have someone like Jim in this business to guide you? Do you think that, I know you're saying he made a big impression on you and helped shape your career. What does he mean to other? I'm sure you've got friends in the business too. What does he mean to somebody like you when you're trying to build a business like this and something that's not an ordinary, normal, run-of-the-mill business?
Well, I mean, unfortunately for most of the people who I started my career out with, they've moved on to other walks in life. And those who have remained, they're more managers of these environments now, not so much actively body artists anymore.
Uh-huh.
As far as some of the newer generation, you know, I do express to them that there is a lot more to being a body piercer than looking at a few YouTube videos and reading the piercing Bible and thinking you understand it all, because the practice of it is a very big deal.
Okay.
Without being hands-on and learning how to work with people, developing a trust, developing your skill, you're really not doing anything that benefits the industry at large. And even more surprisingly, you know, for when I came into the industry 20 years ago, it was a very big deal to understand who the originators were, who were the people who made this for you, and understanding what it means to them and making sure that you're standing up to meet the standard that they require, you know, or that you know, the bar that they have set. And, you know, maybe exceeding that bar, but at least meeting the standard. And there are too many out there today, you know, I could sit with a group of these young kids and go, oh, well, you know, have any of you ever heard of Jim Ward? They go, no, but have you read the Pearson Bible? And I'm like, okay, you're getting ahead of yourself. You need to take a step back and listen to what I'm asking you.
I like that. And I'm so glad you called, because I got to tell you, Trey, just studying and doing research on Jim for this interview has really given me a great amount of respect for the art and the professionalism of people like Jim and you that have followed him, his grandchildren. and that's an exciting thing, I think. By the way, if anyone else wants to call, I've got about 3 more minutes with Jim. The number is 646-716-9922. And so, Jim, do you have any, before we go, any following words? How many piercings do you, and I'm going to ask Trey this too, if you don't mind. How many piercings do you each have on your body right now?
Well, I have a number, but I don't wear jewelry in them very often anymore. that's a long story, and we're running out of time. But
my answer would pretty much be the same thing.
Yeah.
Where maybe a handful of my piercings. Other than that, I've got holes everywhere.
So what you're saying, guys, is I'm going to have a part two sometime. A Jim Ward part two.
If you want, I'm happy to talk to you anytime.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And, yeah, that's what we'll have to do. Hopefully, guys, it would be great if the show was videoed then so they could really see. But, yeah, that's great. Well, listen, I am so happy to have you here. And, Trey, thank you so much for calling. And everyone that's
listening. You're welcome.
And thank you. And somebody to see. Also, someone named Duffy, a guy named Duffy. Oh, no, Duffy Odom, he's a regular listener. Messaged in that he's enjoying the show very much too and learning a lot himself. And I just want to thank you so much for being on here. Yes, we'll do another show soon. We'll do Jim Ward part two. And Trey, I don't know how you found out about this show, but I certainly hope that you'll be back when he is here.
Actually, on Jim's Facebook.
All right. Wonderful. All right, guys.
And
well,
please-
you know, I'll. What?
Please, Jennifer, put in something on your website about where people can order copies of the books.
Oh, yes, yeah, before we go. Yes. The book, Running the Gauntlet, Jim Ward. I will be putting on this page, I will be putting on all of my social media a link to where you can buy the book. It is exquisite. And I'll put it up. Links to all the groups that you mentioned today or tonight for me, Jim, and also again, Running the Gauntlet, Jim Ward, the granddaddy of modern body piercing. You definitely want to get the book and you definitely want to learn about this. And of course, you know, I always close out with my motto, so everybody's got to sleep. And thank you so much, Jim. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Jennifer.